I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Hey, it's Ryan Reynolds, and I'm here with Keith, co-star of my upcoming film, If, only in theaters May 17th. Do you want to tell people the big news? All right, I'll do it. Sign up now and you'll get unlimited for $15 a month and 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan on us.
MintMobile.com/switch.
Upfront payment of $45 equivalent to $15 per month. Unlimited over 40 gigabytes per month. Face lower speeds. Videos at 480p. Active Mint customers by 5/31/24 get 6 months of Paramount Plus Essential Plan. Auto renews after 6 months. Offer ends May 31st, 2024. Separate Paramount Plus registration required. Terms and conditions apply if rated PG.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
This podcast is brought to you by Kempower, the reliable, quick, and scalable EV charging solutions for everyone and everywhere. And StarCharge, the largest EV charging manufacturer in the world, and is also a provider of residential and commercial battery storage. Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Out of Spec podcast. I'm your host, Francie, and today I am joined by Kyle, who is calling in. If you're tuning in on YouTube, you can see he's not at a desk. He's not in a house. He is in a vehicle. It is, in fact, an electric vehicle. And I'll pass it over to you, Kyle, to let everyone know where and what you're calling in from.
Well, I am on the Space Coast in Florida in an F-150 Lightning and really nice weather. I don't know why we don't live here. Colorado's cold. So much nicer in the South. And yeah, we've got a bunch of stuff coming up this week that we're excited to share. But yes, I've just road tripped a Lightning and it's been great.
Yeah, you've been busy. You've been on, like you said, the East Coast in the Southeast and then over in California as well, which is what we're going to talk about today because we've had a lot of discussions about how to make public EV charging better. What are the key problems and what are the key fixes? And when everything got cold up in Chicago this past winter and we talked about how everything was freezing over, no one could charge their EVs, and we talked about why. But we did discuss the idea of, well, if more public DC fast chargers were inside, maybe it would eliminate some of these problems of EVs being too cold to get a charge. You went over to California to see something like this, and this is Electrify America's charging station that is inside. You went over, you tested it out. Tell me, what is this place? What's it called? Where is it? And why did you go?
Yeah, so this is the first Electrify America flagship location, and I called it the nicest public EV charging park hub in America. It's really nice, really nice. And, you know, typically Electrify America is not associated with positive feelings, I would say, for probably most of our audience. When people refer to, I got to charge at EA, that's not like an exciting thing. That's like, sorry, you're going to have a ruined day. And whether or not all of those are baked completely in truth and truly the charging sessions all suck, I would say not every charging session sucks, but certainly a unacceptable amount of poor charging experiences add up over the last five, whatever years I've been charging with Electrify America. So I think a lot of people were shocked when I posted the full tour video on Out of Spec Reviews, where I was like, this is the nicest charging hub in America, and it's Electrify America's, which, you know what? They nailed this one. They deserve the credit for this. And yeah, I'm really pleased about it. It's in San Francisco, California.
Okay, so in San Francisco, you loved it, you raved about it, which is something that, of course, we're eager to do. If something needs criticism, we'll criticize it. If it deserves praise, we'll point it out as well. So what stood out about this hub, flagship, that made it so such a positive experience for you and that you think it will be positive for other people when they come through?
Well, first of all, just I've been visiting San Francisco my whole life. I feel like I know the city pretty well. And in recent times, my impression of spending time in San Francisco has gone downhill. There's just more crime. There's more concern. My friend Jen lives in the Bay Area. She just sold her Taycan because she's worried about getting carjacked driving around. Like, these are things you shouldn't have to worry about living in America, I think. And unfortunately, in San Francisco, you do. So I think people, there was a need for safe charging. This is really becoming a problem where you have an expensive electric car hooked up to a charging equipment. You can't move, you can't leave, you can't do anything. And ultimately, I think people were A, getting frustrated with lines to charge, bunch of electric vehicles, bunch of rental electric vehicles, clogging up public infrastructure that was there, a lack of inner city charging, and a lack of, I would say, accessible, safe charging locations. And so Electrify America, a couple years ago, set out to solve this problem. And it took them, I think, 2.5 years to actually pull it off. They rented a building that was already zoned for automotive, and it took years to get it permitted and approved and the construction done. And just about a month ago from this recording, the first flagship location opened. It has lounge space. It has 20 indoor DC fast chargers up to 350 kilowatts with 24-hour security, which is amazing. And they have like snacks and drinks and fast Wi-Fi, and it's all garage access. So you roll up to the EA hub and, you know, the door opens at night. During the day, they keep the doors open unless the weather's bad, I guess. But yeah, really, really nice location. It's right off some major highways inside of San Francisco. It's like by the Bay Bridge. And yeah, so right downtown, lots of shops, things to do around there. But what I noticed was most people just sat in their car or went to the lounge and hung out.
So people were using it. It was already a popular spot, would you say?
Yeah, so Electrify America, they're like really monitoring this site. They had, for the first month, two technicians on site full time. And they were like helping people set up plug and charge that didn't have that set up. And they were monitoring the locations. And if there was a bug with a charger, they were fixing it immediately, which like that's kind of what, sorry for the noises. That's like kind of what you need at a charging site. So I was really impressed overall with, you know, their commitment to providing good charging at this one location. It needs to spread across the country, but you know, props where it's due. This is a high quality charging experience that's safe in a city that's increasingly becoming unsafe. And it's a premium experience. And you know what? There were cars all the way from a bunch of ID4s to Taycans charging there and everything in between. So I saw F-150 cool. Lightnings there, saw everything. It was great.
So about the chargers, you said that they all go up to 350 kilowatts and then... Is there anything else new about the hardware that you saw that they're implementing at this flagship site that maybe we'll see in other places or pretty standard?
Yeah, so the biggest difference from other sites actually has really nothing to do with the user experience, but it's how the electricity gets there. It's the first Electrify America site that has a medium voltage grid connection. So it's at a 12,000 volt, roughly, medium voltage connection that they then had to purchase the equipment to step down to 480-277, which then feeds the charging equipment. So it's the first time they had to really go on a grid scale connection, which is pretty amazing. That 480 volt connection then feeds the high power cabinets, of which there are 10 BTC, roughly 360, 365 kilowatt cabinets that split power to two dispensers. So they're all load balanced. They don't really tell you which one's shared with which one, but pretty much the one right next to it is shared. And unlike version 2 Tesla supercharging, I think a lot of our audience is familiar with splitting there. That's a 150 kilowatt cabinet that splits to 75 or 74. This is a 365 kilowatt cabinet that splits to just over 150, close to 175. And so I think at any given time, most people, unless you have two Taycans or two Lucidairs or two Hummer EVs, you're not really going to notice the split. And I'm okay with that. I just think, Yeah, it's a really good use of resources to just have the least amount of excess charging capacity at your site available, or unused, I should say, because you really want to get your bang for your buck. You want to save the money on the power conversions and, you know, do a site level load distribution. They are currently on, I guess, what they consider to be their Generation 2 chargers, but I think they refer to them as Gen 4. I don't know, but it's on the BTC hardware. Did not see any Signets there. That's something we should keep an eye on. But and I've heard rumors of perhaps some issues with Signet and Electrify America in recent times. Not sure. But BTC is what they seem to be going full steam ahead with. And I'd really love to see another hardware partner or two involved in building the network out. We know ChemPower is coming to the U.S. We know Alpitronics coming to the U.S. We know, you know, StarCharge has some cool stuff as well. So I'd like to see them maybe expand their hardware beyond just this BTC stuff. But if it's working for them, that's fine. I mean, it hasn't always been working for me from my experience. But at least at this site visit, I took a Volvo XC40 Recharge, plugged it in, had no problems charging at all, and got full power. And all 20, I've never seen this before, all 20 stations, now they may have just got them online because I was there, but all 20 stations were working fine.
That is pretty great. I mean, it shows that just having attention to a site is really key into keeping it up. You know, things go down here and there, but with folks just paying pretty constant attention to it, that's what we need. And I think that's obviously key to what they haven't been doing at most stations, is giving all stations the same dedicated attention that they might be giving this flagship. So it makes me think, you're inside, it's like an enclosed space. What is the buzzing like with all the chargers there? Is it
very quiet?
Okay.
Because they have the actual chargers behind a glass wall on the second floor, which is funny. And all of this is explained. My friend Michael, who runs the technical teams at Electrify America, he's really responsible for all of the hardware, all of the software, the user experience. He does a huge job. And he's the right guy for the job. He's just joining. So he's like trying to, you know, turn this big ship around. Whether or not he can pull it off, I think remains to be seen. But I do think they at least have the right mindset, with Rob as their CEO and Michael as their CTO, really pushing, you know, this, I guess his technical role is VP of technology, but same difference, you know, really pushing it to be better. I think they realize how crappy they were, and they're like not faulting that, because even when I was in the lounge with them, they had I met an ID4 driver when we were just hanging out before the shoot. I was learning about the site. They're like, he's like, are you guys with Electrify America? And he's like, y'all suck, right to their face. And I'm like, that's probably my fault, because we've been, and everyone else, we've been hammering them so hard. And they were like, yeah, we know, but look at what we built here, and we're trying to make things better. And so, you know, the people are in the right place. And that's something that we forget. I forget sometimes that, you know, at least the people that I know at Electrify America do care. So that's something to keep in the back of your head. But it is fair game to roast them when their chargers leave you stranded. Like, that's a problem. And so caring only goes so far, but having working chargers goes farther. But, you know, at this site, they spent a huge amount of money, huge amount of time. They flew out Michael and Octavio, their communications guy, so that I could film this video. And that's, for me, someone who's been extremely hard on them over the years and will continue to be until we see the, you know, reliability that we're looking for out of the network. And I would say we're on our way to seeing that. You know, Tom and I just road trip two Lightnings down the East Coast, and this is not at the hub, and he had zero issues, not one, on all of his charging stops down the entire East Coast. So
that's pretty good. You know, hopefully Electrify America is listening in and of course watching all of this. So I will use my opportunity to point out that the one DC fast charger in a 50-mile radius of Memphis, Tennessee is Electrify America. Four stalls, two of them have been down for at least a month. They were down for months before the end of last year, and there have been tickets on two of those chargers for months. So Electrify America, please just give that site a little bit of attention. There are 600,000 people in this area and one charger that is half down, and then half that's remaining is derated. So
yeah, it seems like a problem. And actually, it was so funny. Tom had such a perfect trip on the way down. And I went to a Tesla supercharger right afterwards, which was right next to an EA site. And the EA site had like a line of, I don't know, five or six cars, and there was four charging. So there was about 10 cars in total. And a charger literally blew up while I was there. And I'm like, you know what? That was, I'm glad we gave them the good video, but this is also like, oh, back to reality. Yeah.
So I do think, and this is something that we want to cover more in terms of like myth busting, but being accurate about this as well. All of these chargers are inside, and all these EVs are inside. Did you talk at all about fires and mitigating issues like that with the team?
No, we should have, because it's actually something I think about probably. I'm probably more paranoid than I should be about an electric vehicle fire. Statistically, they happen much less than a combustion car, but I also own a bunch of electric cars, and I'm charging a bunch of electric cars, and the risk if a thermal event happens, it's much harder to extinguish it with an electric vehicle. And that is something I didn't ask them about, but this is the first I'm thinking of it, and I really should have. That would have been interesting to know. The site itself is beautiful. I think they really put a lot of thought into it. I'm sure fire was part of their consideration in the engineering process of it. I can't imagine they've had very many fires at their stations. I know they've had a few, but I don't think they've had many. Maybe, you know, you can count them on one hand that I've heard about. After millions of sessions, that's pretty good. But it still happens. Still happens.
Yeah. Still happens. And now a new scenario where people are in a building. Not trying to scare anyone, but I do think it's a topic of discussion. And I'm sure something that all the code and, you know, permits that they went through addressed and should have addressed. But if we see more of these kind of flagships, I think this will become more of a topic and, just a relevant thing for us to cover.
What's your impression of an indoor in a major metropolitan area? If you didn't have home charging, which most of the people I spoke to, this is their daily charging location or weekly or whatever they use, their main charging point. Yeah. Would you prefer, like, if you had something in downtown Memphis that was enclosed and had security and food and stuff, is that where you would go? Or do you think it's a waste of money? Or what do you think?
I don't think it's a waste of money at all, especially compared to like what I have to use now. The station that I described, and then it's like, I don't know, a half a mile or a quarter of a mile walk to Target where like you hang out. So I think if one, it was enclosed, you know, and if I talk to people, I have to be outside of my car, you know, and it's kind of cold still a little bit. So I think if there was a place to socialize with other EV drivers or just to sit and use Wi-Fi, not only safely, but with amenities like bathrooms and being able to get snacks, I think that is, I don't think that's, I'm not going to undervalue that experience. I think that would be quite nice and would reflect also pretty great on the brand as long as they kept it up. I think that is a pretty good model. I've seen lots of automakers consider putting up, you know, a flagship when they're getting EVs on the market, but it is very expensive. So I don't think we would see these kind of things widespread. But that's why I think we see of them more paired with gas stations. I think that's a more efficient way of spending that money. We put in the chargers, you manage the building. But the whole thing together, I think, is a nice offering. But I doubt that it would be enough of a cost benefit.
I mean, this is certainly a marketing PR move for them. It's a way to enhance a city where they really do have a problem with safety and to make sure people can charge safely, which is good. And I just don't know how many more they're going to build. They've committed to two more, Santa Barbara and San Diego. But I don't think they've committed. Well, we got balloons here. I don't think they've committed to doing any more than that.
Yeah, I would see why. And I see why they're putting them in California, all EV drivers.
I'd recommend everyone go watch that video. It really covers the customer experience. There's a lot of talk also about reliability and network performance with Michael. And he was as transparent as the PR teams would let him be. And I think it was pretty genuine and pretty great. And I was glad we were able to get him on camera.
Great. Yeah, everyone should definitely go check it out. We'll put the link to that in the show notes. Did they mention anything about J3400, the North American charging standard, the Tesla connector?
Yeah, some interesting things, actually. So they were saying, 25 is when they've committed to start to go. They're already evaluating cable suppliers right now for NACS, but there's nothing that's UL approved. So there's no like public, they can't put any cable on their charger and have a insurance policy or whatever they need the UL stuff for. Just safety certified as well is important. So they're going through that process now. They also mentioned that like if everyone's going to have an adapter, Like, what's the, you know, when next cars come out, that there's less of a immediate need to put J3400 on the chargers. They also mentioned that the single cable cabinets will stay single cable. I don't think they've come up with a full solution as to how they want to do that, but I'm guessing it's going to be a magic dock type thing. Is that's what I mentioned to them. And I was like, oh, are you going to do like a magic dock where one cable and then it has a built-in adapter? And they were like, we're evaluating all options. So
I'm sure. Yeah. That's their script answer, which they should be evaluating all options. That'd be interesting because that's Tesla's design, right? The magic dock.
I think it's not patented. I think anyone can do it. I know ChargePoint was looking into something like that at one point, and you know, it's possible we'll see others as well. I think that's the best solution. No need to put another cable on the unit. I also don't love the idea of adapters, but if it's a station-owned adapter, then that becomes part of the cable, and it can be maintained and serviced and checked, assuming they do that. And that should be safer than just a third-party random adapter that someone's going to show up with that's not rated for, you know, who knows what.
And we definitely do not encourage or advise or think it's a good idea to use any sort of off-brand adapters on chargers, even though you might be eager. People comment on that a lot.
I mean, think about, I'll probably do it. We got to play around with them.
Yeah, of course, but I wouldn't recommend it to anyone.
Yeah, no, certainly we're not going to recommend it. I think like most of those adapters, this is just a guess, not rooted in any scientific nature at all, but it's just a guess. Most of those third-party adapters will work and work just fine for maybe the first year. And then once you get enough cycles through them and enough heat soaking, I'm even noticing my Tesla adapter from Ford. I don't know where it is at the moment. This one here, the Max to CCS. Yeah, I already dropped it, by the way, and like nicked the crap out of it. So it needs
a little purse handle.
Yeah, and Ford's already asking for it back. I said, no, I'm not giving you this thing back. What are you talking about? I guess they really only meant we could have it for a short period of time. But I told them I'm keeping it through March at least. So
it is March. For another
month. Yeah, keeping it through the end.
Oh, through all of March. Okay, great. Yeah.
So like when that goes back, I still need to do stories. So I'll probably use a third-party adapter. For that, and like, you know, I'll just monitor the temperatures. I mean, if it's going to blow up, I'd rather it blow up on me before someone else.
Yeah, for sure. Me too. Okay. Anything else you want folks to know about the EA station? I think they can get a lot of details from your video.
Yeah, the video covers it all. This was just a supplementary piece of content.
Of course. Thank you, Kyle. Sounds like a fun time. We'll see if I don't think these will be widespread, but I think they're cool to have. And it's great to consider more and more about what the EV charging experience should be like when you're charging on a public network. There should be amenities. There should be safety. There should be attention to make sure that the chargers are always running and that troubleshooting is happening so that people can charge when they need to.
Yeah, and we should say a big thank you to Electrify America for flying Michael out and allowing us to film there. They certainly, you know, if there's anyone they should have blocked, it could have been us. Not to say that we've ever been wrong or anything like that. I mean, I'm sure we've been wrong a couple of times, but like not to say like we've ever been unfair. They've just sucked over the years. And really cool of them to like, you know, take it on the sleeve, whatever the saying is, and allowing us to film a good story when they deserve to have a good story. So I'm pleased with that.
Well, I think it shows, there's integrity in your coverage, Kyle. Okay. Thank you for, again, coming onto the podcast. Thank you, everyone, for tuning in. If you visit the San Francisco Electrify America charging flagship hub, let us know. Let us know how that experience goes. And if you would like to see more of these in general, and if you have any questions, we will see you next time on the next episode. Have a wonderful rest of your day.
Even on a budget, quality is non-negotiable. That's why Quince is the place to score high-end essentials at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Get your hands on buttery soft cashmere sweaters from just $60, Italian leather jackets, and so much more. And the best part about Quince? They exclusively partner with factories committed to safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Elevate your style without the elevated price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Ready? Okay. Give me a beach.
Beach!
Give me great food.
Tacos!
Give me adventure.
Hiking!
Give me a date night.
Sunset cruise!
Give me some smiles.
Cheese!
Give me more beaches.
Beaches!
What's that spell?
San Diego!
If you're happy and you know it, San Diego is the place to show it. Book your trip at sandiego.org. Funded in part with the City of San Diego Tourism Marketing District Assessment Funds.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.